Hangman of England, William Calcraft, Part 3, 1849 to 1864. In 1849, when John Gleeson was hanged at Liverpool in September, the crowd was estimated at 100,000 people. All the vacant land in front of the prison and spreading down to the canal were packed with onlookers. It was reported that the crowd presented much the same appearance with respect to numbers that you would have found at races at Aintree or Epsom, or for that matter, Derby Day. Later the same year, Calcraft was called upon to execute Friedrich George Manning and his wife Marie on the roof of the Horsemonger Lane Gaol. They had murdered Patrick O'Connor, Marie's former lover, for financial gain, and buried his body under the kitchen floor of their home at Bermondsey. They tried to blame each other at the trial, so they both end up getting executed. The usual enormous crowd gathered outside the prison on the morning of the execution. The hanging of a husband and wife was a real novelty not to be missed. Mrs. Manning wore a black satin dress, and as a result, that fabric material went out of fashion for decades. Charles Dickens was again present at this execution, having hired the roof and kitchen of a house for the occasion for the extremely moderate sum of 10 guineas, basically 10 pounds. He wrote to the Times the same day, quote, "I have seen habitually some of the worst sources of general contamination and corruption in this country, and I think there are not many phases of London life that could surprise me. I am solemnly convinced that nothing that ingenuity could devised to be done in this city in the same compass of time could work such ruin as one public execution, and I stand astounded and appalled by the wickedness of it exhibits. I do not believe that any community can prosper where such a scene of horror and demoralization as was enacted this morning outside Horsemonger Lane Gaol is present or presented at the very doors of good citizens and passed by unknown or forgotten." A lengthy debate in the newspaper's pages followed the execution and Dickens' first letter, much of it concerned with the rights and wrongs of abolishing executions in public, which Dickens was by no means the first to think necessary. Henry Fielding, the author of Tom Jones and a London magistrate, had argued for executions to be carried out in some privacy a century before. Dickens returned to the desirability of executions being conducted in the privacy of the prison in another letter, in which he proposed that a murderer's execution should be conducted with every terrible solemnity that careful consideration could devise. Mr. Calcraft, the hangman, for whom I have some information in reference to the last occasion, should be restrained in his unseemly briskness in his jokes, his oaths, and his brandy. Now, this suggests that Calcraft, at nearly 50 years of age, was no longer the quiet and respectable man that he had been at first, but had become brutalized by his profession. When Lord Macaulay suggested in Parliament that death penalty abolitionists were victims of a kind of effeminate feeling, Dickens wondered what there might be that is specially manly and heroic in advocating for the gallows, and declined to express his admiration for Mr. Calcraft, the hangman, as doubtless one of the most manly specimens now in existence, according to Dickens. Calcraft occasionally used as his assistant when he required one, a man named Smith, who was formerly a nail maker and then a farm laborer, who was described as tall and wiry. He sometimes wore a brown velveteen jacket and a bowler hat, and one report has Smith wearing a long white smock frock. So he was really the dandy of the gallows. In June of 1856, in order to save money from bringing Calcraft from London, George Smith was hired to hang Dr. William Palmer, who was convicted of poisoning John Parsons' cook, suspected of poisoning his wife, and a number of other people for financial gain. A large crowd gathered outside Stafford Prison. Some of the people paid a pound for one of the front row seats on the raised platforms, which were erected all around the front of the prison. Others paid local householders for a position in one of their windows, and some even to stand in their gardens. It was estimated that 20,000 saw the execution, and 300 policemen were required and stationed around the goal. As Dr. Palmer mounted the scaffolding, a huge roar went up. He shook hands with Smith and said, "God bless you." He died quickly, which was a disappointment to the crowd who hadn't felt they received their money's worth. Usually they expected the victim to convulse a time or two, and that would, of course, been their money's worth. Smith sold the rope used to souvenir hunters at a shilling an inch. Only it was not only Smith's only execution, it was just simply his most famous one. In 1860, Smith was engaged to execute Francis Price at Warwick, and afterward was roughed up by a gang while waiting for his train. The anger was motivated because Smith was alleged to have dropped Price before he finished saying his prayers. 20 or 30 men were involved, some threatening to shove Smith under the arriving train, but the station master managed to rescue him and locked him up in a waiting room for his safety, at least until the train arrived. In the early 1860s, Calcraft was kept busy. There was a wave of a new crime called mugging in the streets of towns, especially in the impoverished north of England, and the reaction of it against it resulted in more executions during 1863 than any other year since the 1830s. But 1861, and that year, the number of death penalty offenses, which had 50 years before been over 200, were now reduced to just 4. In 1860, Calcraft executed James Mullins, a former policeman who murdered his employer, Mrs. Emsley. And in 1864, he executed Franz Müller, a German tailor who murdered Thomas Briggs in a railway carriage in London and then tossed the body out on the tracks. Müller confessed to Calcraft seconds before he was hanged. The large and disgraceful crowd present at Müller's execution did a lot to lend support to the new opinion that the public executions needed to end. The London Times reported the scene as follows, quote, "Before the slight, slow vibrations of the body had ended, robbery and violence, loud laughing, oaths, fighting, obscene conduct, and still more filthy language reigned around the gallows far and near. Such to the scene remained with little change or respite until the old hangman Calcraft slunk again along the drop amid the hisses and sneering inquiries of what he had to drink that morning. After failing to cut the rope, he made a second attempt and was more successful, and the body of Müller disappeared from view." So there's quite a discussion going on in England at this point, doing away with public executions, which were originally supposed to, you know, show people what would happen, and it would be a deterrent. But it, since it becomes such a carnival, if you will, I would point out that when they, you know, when they had that section where the people were mad because the guy died too quickly, that's exactly the response people had in the first criminal being executed by the guillotine, because it had happened so fast, there wasn't anything, and it was over with. And they started screaming and yelling that they wanted the rope back, they wanted the gallows back. And some people thought that was the crowd saying, well, that's because this is too horrible. No, it wasn't. There wasn't any spectacle to it. It was just too fast. So you get some really odd things. We've got one more round on Mr. Calcraft, who will be doing this job into his 70s. Now, the sources for this: The History of Capital Punishment by Scott, The Encyclopedia of Murder by Wilson, Collin, and Pittman, The Reluctant Hangman by Attle, The Common Hangman by Blaud, and The Hangman of England by Bailey. You know, we are in the history, in the Christmas season, and I would imagine a copy of The Encyclopedia of Murder for your odd friends would make an interesting gift. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com. and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs. And if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.